The Chafetz Chaim writes, at the end of his classic sefer, Avas Chesed, dealing with, as its title implies, dealing with Chesed, and the parameters of doing for others, that there are lots of ways that one can be gomel Chesed, that one can help, that one can reach out, that don't cost money. Tough times, but many of us have reduced our tzedakah allocations, understandably so. But tzedakah does not just have to be with a check. One can be mekayim, one can fulfill the mitzvah of gemilas chasadim in many, many other ways. Whether simply giving a smile, whether offering to help, whether teaching, and achron, which is going to be the topic of this morning's talk, giving advice and intervening when appropriate. The Chumash at the end of Parshas Kisaitse tells of the din of Yibam, with which most of us are probably familiar, as in which, God forbid, you have a young man who passes away, leaving behind a wife without children, and a brother, or multiple brothers. So as we know, the halacha is that the living brother, the Yavam, has two options, either to do Yibam or to do Chalitza. Either, although it's not exactly the same thing, but effectively marrying the widow, the Yavama, of his deceased brother, and continuing his legacy, or going ahead and going through with the Chalitza ceremony, by which, in which the shoe is removed, etc., etc., and she and the two are separated, and now she has the right, the Yavama can marry anyone she so desires. So the Gemara Yavama's comments on the Pasuk V'dibru Elav, the Bezdin, that is going to be performing either the Chalitza or acknowledging the Yibam, has to speak to the potential couple and give an Eitza Hoganas. The Bezdin offers a recommendation. Should this couple go through with the Yibam, should they essentially marry, or should they part ways? It depends on, are they compatible? Is there an age difference, a significant age difference, etc., etc.? It's based on this, the Vilna Gaon writes, that we learn there is a general obligation to give advice. And that's even though, of all the things to learn this from, that's of all the sources, what does Yibam have to do with 99.9% of the world? So the answer is, says the Gaon, what we learn from the mitzvah of Yibam, among other things, is the importance of being masi and eitza hoganas, of offering advice and offering good advice. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch writes, if you look at the first source on your sheets, number one, Mitzvahs Asay Lahalvas Laniya Yisrael. Thus, there is a positive commandment to loan money to those who are less fortunate than ourselves. Vihi Mitzvah V'dalah Yosef Minat Staka. Then this is an even greater mitzvah than the mitzvah of giving charity. Ukravo Anika Dem Laniya Macherim. And one who is poor and is a relative takes precedence over other aniyim. And the poor from his own city would take precedence over those from other towns. And even if you have somebody who is wealthy and needs a bridge loan, mitzvah lahavos lefisho, ulahanaso af bedvarim, uliyaatso, eitzahau geneslo. And even if it's not simply a matter of money, there is always a mitzvah to give advice, whether advice in investing, most of which was not all that good as it turns out, whether advice in terms of family matters, in terms of child-parent relationships, in terms of shidduchim, etc., etc. The list goes on and on and on. The obligation v'dibro I love. For the Bezdin to speak to the Yavam, to speak to the Yavama, does not stop at this very limited context. Rather, as we see in the Shulchan Aruch, is extended to other areas as well. In fact, the Peleoitz writes in his classic Sefer that who was the very first one to consult? Any ideas? Who was the first to seek advice? Hashem nase adam b'tzalmeinu. Well, God doesn't really need anybody's advice, but in the creation of man, as it were, God says, let us make man, consulting with his heavenly court, with the angels. God doesn't need any input, but rather, as the Peleoites writes, what Hashem was teaching us is that we have to consult, we have to seek the advice of others. Not everybody knows everything about everything. We only know a lot of things about most things. But even HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeks advice, and the heavenly courts, the malachim, the angels, give that advice when asked. The Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah makes, however, a very important qualification. Writes this out, Shari Tshuva, number 2 on the sheets, when the Chumash commands, Vilifnei iver lo sitein michshol, not to create a stumbling block. So of course that means not to trip somebody up and cause them to do a sin, to do an avera, to give an unsuspecting individual food that you yourself would not eat. So that's part of Lifnei Iver. But as Rashi and Chumash tells us, Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol also entails giving improper advice, which is why the Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Shari Tshuva number 2, of his harnu min amikra hazeh lehasi eitza hahogenes lasher yivo eitz imanu, to give advice to those who seek our counsel, v'lo lachshilo be'eitza nivara, and not to harm through bad advice. This is probably the most important line. Not to give advice according to what you think is good for you, but you have to try to put yourself in the other individual's shoes. What's good for that other person? That a person not only should give advice when he or she is asked, but this should be part of our thought process, that part of our constant consciousness should include thinking about ways that we could help out others, to help out others, not with money necessarily, that might not always be possible, but at least to share expertise and to share advice when it is helpful. A lot of times, we're very nervous, and it's how do you know if the advice is the correct advice? So Gemara tells us in Brachas that sometimes lamad lishoncha lomar eini yodeya. For a lot of people, this is very difficult. That sometimes a person has to habituate themselves to say, I don't know. Right? Sometimes everybody thinks, especially rabbis, right? That somebody, you always have to give answers. So a lot of times the real answer is that I don't know. Limad lishoncha lomar eini yodeya. The Pnei Menachem of Ger took the obligation of giving advice so seriously that he personally would refuse to give advice unless he was willing to back it up literally with a money-back guarantee, in the sense that if he would advise a businessman to buy or sell a building, he would only give that advice if he knew that if he tells him to sell one building and to buy another building, that if in 3 months from now the building that was sold still doesn't have a buyer, the Pnei Menachem had the means and was willing to step in and buy that building. Now, not everybody has the means of the Ger Rebbe in Israel. That doesn't mean that we should never give advice unless we can afford to back it up with 100%. But what we do see from this Hanhaga, what we do see from the behavior of the Pnei Menachem, is the seriousness with which he approached the enterprise. That he understood that if I give advice, it hurts somebody. So Yatzah Schara Befseido, that's the downside, is very, very significant. And as such, he was only willing to give advice if he could literally back that advice up. The Chafetz Chaim addresses something that's probably very, very common. Let's say a friend calls you and asks advice on shopping. A little bit different than a Pnei Menachem situation. So you know that there is one store that your friend who called you generally goes to. And it's a store that's owned by a very fine individual. It's owned by a Jew. You also know that you saw the same item at Walmart for 10% less. So what's the halacha then? What do you do? So if it would be 50% less, 60% less, which is also sometimes the case, so that might be, says the Chafetz Chaim, grounds to tell the person, go to Walmart. Walmart of Radin, they got them everywhere. But if there's only a slight difference, so writes the Chafetz Chaim, it's not so clear that you have the right to tell somebody to stop going to the store that they've been going to save $2 on a $25 item. That it's one store is $23, another store is $25. So you might not have the right to give advice to an individual to go stop shopping where they shop in order to save a percentage that is less than a sixth of the going price. So that gets a little tricky, except that there is a notion, even though it's not absolutely binding, but there is a notion that whenever possible, and as Rashi and Chumash quotes, so when the Chumash describes Avram Avinu returning back to Israel, to Canaan, so he took the same route that he had taken previously. So Rashi says, the Chumash is teaching us derech eretz, that a person, unless there is a reason, should not be mishanes, should not deviate machsanya shelo from his or her regularly frequented establishments. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamnetsky says that doesn't apply a lot. That only applies if they do you favors. But if there happens to be a store that you go to all the time, so you don't have an obligation to keep on going to that store forever, others, though, don't assume this way. Others assume that if there's a store that you're a regular customer in, so unless there's some reason, there is what to be said for maintaining your patronage of that establishment. Yeah.
I can give advice to some person.
Right.
Right. So why should I say, you know, this
is whatever? And that, well, because if they're not any worse for the wear, why do you have to put them in the position? In other words, that's a fair point, because nobody's telling anybody to accept your advice, but presumably if you're giving it, it's in order to be helpful. Now, there is a difference between if a person can afford or not afford, meaning for some people, a difference of $2 is significant. That's a person on a fixed income with inflation, whatever it is. A difference between $25 and $23 is significant. If it's a medicine that has to be refilled every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks, a difference of $2 might also be significant. But
what is the line that?
Not clear. Not clear. That's a sixth. What's a shesus? A sixth is a very significant number. Let's say if the difference is less than a sixth, so you don't, but if it's more than a sixth, so that's very likely to be enough of where the good advice is to go somewhere else. Rav Sternbach Shalita adds that if you're already in the store, and this happens also, that you're in a store and you're looking at items, and then somebody tells you, you're at the counter. I've seen this at the counter. I got it down the block. It's 50% cheaper. I was in Yerushalayim about 3 weeks ago. This exact same item, two stores away. I walked into one store for a particular item. Walked in the second store, two stores away. It was less than half the price. So that's a little bit extreme. The first store, a bunch of ganavim, it could be. But under normal circumstances, Sir Sternbach writes that it is improper when you're inside the store already and have essentially decided on a purchase The other individuals decide on the purchase for you now to go and say you could save a couple of cents if you go somewhere else. Again, if it's very extreme, so that would be a different situation. When it comes to relatives, so the halacha might be a little bit different. There's a very interesting gemara in Maseches Ksubis number 5 on the sheets. Once upon a time, Kerevte de Rav Nachman Zevinta Liksubasa Betavas Hana, a relative of Rav Nachman, a woman, sold her ksuba. Now she has to maintain the ksuba, but she essentially sold it on speculation that in the event that she passes away before her husband, so the buyer gets nothing. But if though the husband either divorces her or passes away before she does, so then the buyer collects the face value of the ksuba. So as it turned out, Igrisha Ushachiva, the husband divorced her, which entitled her to the value of the ksuba. But then before collecting Ushachiva, she passed away. So what happened, the buyer of the ksuba, Asu Katavala Livrata, the buyer of the ksuba came and asked the daughter to now pay, and as much as the daughter now yarshin from the mother, the buyer asked the daughter to pay the value of the ksuba. Rav Nachman suggested, Amar lehu Rav Nachman, leka de lesser sel eitzah, nobody's going to give any advice, I have a great idea. Tizel v'tichlul ksubasa d'ima l'gabi avua. Go, you daughter, go and be mocheles, forego the ksuba, and as a result, you will then yarshin, and you will have no obligation, you will get out of your obligation to pay the purchaser. So that's essentially Rav Nachman, leaving out all the details, essentially Rav Nachman came up with a great scam to advise his relative not to have to pay the money that she really should have to pay. It wasn't a scam is too strong a word. This is a suggestion that legally, technically, would exempt from payment. Then Rav Nachman, the Gemara concludes, had second thoughts. Says that what did Rav Nachman originally think, and then why did he change his mind? So the Gemara says Rav Nachman originally thought that I have a right to give advice that I wouldn't give to somebody else, to a relative, because Shlomo HaMelech teaches in Mishlei, Mibzarcha lo sisalei, from a relative, you never run away. You never ignore the plight of a relative. And then Rav Nachman changed his mind, because Adam Chashem Shaini, that an individual of Rav Nachman's stature should not really be getting involved in shtick. But bottom line, some of the Paschim say, you do see that if somebody is not in Adam Chashem, just a regular person, advice that we would not be allowed to give other people perhaps would be different in the case of a relative. So getting back to our case, our shopping example, that's even though you might not have the right to go and tell a friend or an acquaintance not to go to a particular store that they've been going to because you could save $2 at Walmart, but maybe a relative might be different. Now, is this absolutely the halacha? So not all that clear. These halachas are very complicated, are very, very tricky, to the extent where sometimes a person would like to take the attitude that Mali Ulitzara, I don't want to get involved in this. I'm going to tell the person to go to a different store. That's going to hurt the regular store. I'm not going to give the advice. Whatever I do is going to be wrong. So I'm just going to be Miss Alain. I'm going to ignore. I'm not going to get involved. There's a complicated question regarding a shidduch. Somebody happens all the time. Somebody calls us. I know something. So just don't return the phone call. That's easy. So it's easy. But the problem is it's wrong, in as much as what makes these halachas very complicated is that you don't always have the right to just not return the phone call. Although, as we mentioned, giving advice is a positive commandment. It's part of chesed, gemilas chasadim v'hafta l'recha kamalcha, derived from v'dibro elav in the case of Yibam, but there is also a negative commandment involved. And that is, the Chumash tells us, lo samod al dam re'echa. Don't stand idly on your brother's blood. So we all know this pasuk. What does that mean? As the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin, if somebody is drowning, God forbid, there's a mitzvah for you to jump in and to try to save the person. But the Rambam and other sources extend lo samen al dam reyecha to include a monetary instance as well, in which when the Chumash commands not to stand idly on your brother's blood, but to get involved, that doesn't just mean when somebody's life is at stake, but rather this would include as well, as the Rambam writes in his Bavt in Hilchas Rotzeach number 8 on the sheets, as well as number 9, which we'll now read inside even more clear, the Rambam writes, on mitzvah haresh tzadi zayin, the 297th mitzvah, shezirano mi'israshel ba'atzals nefesh achad mi'israel, not to withhold, not to stand back and refrain from saving a Jew in danger, when we see a Jew, his life is at stake, oh ha-hefzid, or a loss out of pocket. A monetary loss also requires involvement. That if I'm in the position to save somebody money, I'm in the position to, it's not a question of life and death, it's simply a question of money. So the Rambam writes, that's also included in the mitzvah of lo samod, of lo samod al dam reyecha. Therefore, it becomes very complicated. Because you can't just take the attitude that because I'm not sure if I'm going to give good advice, or because if I give advice to one, if I give advice to the person inquiring about the shidduch, it's going to hurt the other side. It's going to help one and hurt the other. Therefore, I'm not going to return the phone call. So that's not at all simple. If it would just be a positive commandment, so you don't do it. But by not doing it, one could potentially be in violation if you have what to contribute. If you're in a position to help and you don't, one can potentially be in violation of lo samad al dam reyecha. I'm sorry? Excellent. Perfect segue. What about if in the case of, let's go back to the case of the two stores, let's say even two Jewish stores. What about the issue of Lashon Hara, that I'm, by boosting or by pushing one store, I'm speaking negatively about the second, or in the case of a shidduch, I'm saying something negative about one side that was suggested. So this is exactly what the poskim speak about, and this is why, and very significant poskim. The Chelkas Yaakov Dayan Breish, Zichron Lefracha, was a major posek who lived and escaped the war and spent most of his life in Switzerland. Dayan Yaakov Breish wrote a sefer called Chelkas Yaakov, number 10 on the sheets. He passed away in the early 1970s of the 20th century. Writes Dayan Breish. Rofei Charedi. So back in the day, that just meant Orthodox. That's an Orthodox doctor. Shalani Shela Manyanis. Listen to this. I was asked the following question. This could really be a model for a lot of very similar questions. Rizel Shano. This is what he asked. Bachur Echad Kiven Esrim Shana. Very sad question. A young man of the age, approximately 20 years old. Yeshla Rahmana Litzlan Chalas Misukenas. He has the machlan. He writes in parentheses exactly what's meant. He has lo aleinu. He has cancer. Vilachale atzmo, and the young man himself and his family lo noda klaumiza. The young man does not know anything about this. His family knows nothing about this. And uchumuvan, as is known, understood, shezemi chukei harofim shelo lomar zos lakrovim v'gam lachale b'chnei shlo yichbar alav achalas sheyizvada lezos lachale. Back at the time the question was asked. I'm sorry. The law was you don't tell sick people about their condition. That's not exactly the law today, but it might still be the halacha. That's a completely different question. Sometimes if it's going to worsen the condition of the chola, so we're not so quick. Even if American law is not this way, so it becomes very tricky. It's not so simple that the doctor has the right to reveal something that is going to cause aggravation and only worsen the condition of the patient. So that's not exactly the law today in the United States. That used to be the law in certain countries, at least. Bottom line, in this case, the chola and family are unaware of the condition. Now, what's the shaila? V'hu nisareis. He has now, what does nisareis mean? He's now engaged to a lenara bisula, to a young woman. V'rotzeli naseima, they want to get married. So the question is going to become, imagine if you were this doctor. Happy young couple. Does the doctor have an obligation to go to the Kala's family and inform the family, inform the Kala of Nebuch the Chassan's condition? So Rav Breish concludes, Ulachar Ha'in Ktsas, skipping a couple of lines. After a little bit of investigation, that the doctor does have an obligation, even though he's obviously going to be hurting the side of the chassan, and the chassan is not doing anything wrong. Remember, he knows nothing about his condition. The doctor, right, Paskins Dayan Breish, has an obligation to tell the kala. This is something, he has an obligation. Why does he have an obligation? So Dayan Breish continues to quote the Rambam, that lo samar al dam reyecha does not just mean to jump into a river and save somebody from drowning, or as the Gemara gives an example, the same from listim, but to save somebody from any other type of danger or any other type of bad situation. In this case, more details are given. He goes on to say that the chassan is only expected to live for a year or two. In this case, the doctor would have an obligation to go and inform the kala of the condition of the chassan based on lo samod al dam reyecha. Nothing. He doesn't know the kala. Never met the kala. Nothing to do with her. That she's Jewish and he's Jewish. That's it. Yeah. Yes. That's the chiddush, meaning that in these cases, I would be happy to close, don't stick my nose in other people's business. Don't get involved in a situation which is going to have definitely some negative repercussions. But the problem is that it's not just a mitzvah, but there's a losaseh in question, where losam al dam reyacha, which would therefore prohibit withholding information that could save this young woman from being an almana at age 20, whatever she is. Yeah. Right. So let me give you another story. The biography of the Chazon Ish, the Pe'er Hador, that's the name of the biography, tells of a Rav from Tel Aviv. Tells of a Rav from Tel Aviv who asked the Chazon Ish, and this is probably the late 1940s, early 1950s, very, very delicate question. What was the Shaila? And this is not an issue of American law. This was a question of both the happiness of a couple as well as very particular halachos regarding what a Beis Din specifically is allowed to divulge in terms of how they reach their various conclusions. That's what had happened. This Rav was a member of a Beis Din that had administered a get. Unfortunately, a young man, a young woman, not so young anymore, had been married for a lot of years and were not able to have children. And therefore, even though they were otherwise happy, so this Beis Din administered a get. Now the Rav in question, who had spoken to the Chazon Ish, was aware that the problem was from the husband. Baruch Hashem today, there are lots of things that can be done, etc. But this is the late 1940s. The Rav was very aware the problem was from the husband. Now the husband is engaged to another woman. So does the Rav have an obligation to tell the next Kala what he knows about this man? So here it's a little bit tricky, because the halacha, as I said, is a Beis Din is not allowed to reveal what went on behind closed doors. So this fellow is wearing two hats. He's a Rav / Jew, but he's also a Dayan, a member of the Beis Din. What can he or can't he say? So the Chazon Ish wasn't the Chazon Ish for nothing. The Chazon Ish was a real, you know what the Chazon Ish said? You know what I recommend? And this is an important precedent. Said the Chazon Ish, you know what I would say? I would go to the Kala and I would say, if it was my family, I wouldn't recommend the Shidduch. That's it. What they want, that's where they want to go ahead, they don't want to go ahead, not my problem. P.S. What happened? So the Rav followed the advice of the Chazon Ish, in which, and he told, if it was my family, I would not recommend the Shidduch. Why? None of your business. I'm just telling you that if it was my own family, I would not be interested. P.S. They didn't listen to the Rav. They got married and had a large family and lived happily ever after. So that was in the, so what a bench tracht and got lacht. Everybody is so smart. That's a question that would take lots and lots of weeks to answer. That's in a case, the question was as follows. Nobody get too excited here. Question was as follows. In a case where there was an illness that was not disclosed, would that constitute kedusha ta'us? Where the whole wedding did not take place. It was done with false assumptions on a false pretext, and then the whole thing doesn't count. So the answer is that in very rare instances, yes, and in 90 whatever percent of the cases, no. And it's a very complicated matter that's not for local rabbanim. Those types of questions generally are forwarded to the poskei hador. Right, that's what I said. Excellent. Yes. Right. So two very, very important points, one of which will be addressed, one of which was kind of just addressed, that in the case of the doctor, the Dayan Breisha's case, in which the doctor said that I know that the patient's got to live for maximum two years. So number one, this is a violation of confidentiality, of American law, and probably European law, wherever this case was. Number two, well, who says the doctor is right? In particular, with the cancer, this barcha, there's so many different things. So answering the second question first, that is absolutely the case. This question was the 1950s, if I'm not mistaken. I've got to look at the date. There's a very big difference if the information that you have may or may not be relevant. That's if it's something that's only a very far-flung choice. So a number of contemporary posts can write, you don't have to worry about it. With respect to the first issue, namely that a doctor is being asked to violate American law, so in of itself, if halacha is against civil law, so halacha wins. That's when halacha doesn't have an opinion. Dina de malchus adina, the law of the land is binding. But if the halacha is against American law is against halacha, halacha takes precedence. However, hopefully we'll have time in just a few minutes. It could, however, be that despite the fact that fundamentally halacha would take precedence, it could be that you, as an individual, are not obligated to get involved in a case that is going to cause you great harm, such as losing your license, being suspended, etc., etc. That's a discussion. Hopefully, in about 5 minutes, we'll get up to that. Okay. The Chavetz Chaim, in his Sefer Chavetz Chaim, gives a number of guidelines that are extremely, extremely important in this regard. When I am solicited for advice, I'll give you another case, a business partnership does occur. Somebody asks me, you know, I'm looking to get into a partnership with Plony. I know that in the past you had dealings with him. So what do you have to say about him? Is this somebody I can trust? Is this somebody that it's worth getting? Is this somebody who's going to steal from me? Somebody who's going to give me aggravation? Somebody who's going to be lazy? What do you say? Now, I personally had a bad running with this fellow. He owed me money. He never paid. He made excuses. He's going to pay you. So should I tell this person? So the answer, based on what we've learned, is, well, probably yes. And if you don't have the right just to walk away because of Lo Samad al Dam Re'echa, according to the Rambam, applies even to money. But at the same time, I'm speaking Lashon Hara about this first individual. And moreover, you know, my dealings with him were 10 years ago. Maybe he did tshuva. Maybe he changed. In real life, it doesn't happen so much. Maybe he changed. Maybe he's not the same as he was 10 years ago. So what do I do? So says the Chafetz Chaim, you tread lightly is what you do. You have to give the advice. However, he says, with five conditions. Number 11, this on page number 3, about one, where it says Aleph, where it says, beginning with the Beis, the Elohein, that's 7 lines into number 11. These are the 5 conditions that have to be met, that you can reveal that, yes, I did business with this individual a bunch of years ago, and it didn't work out. However, number 1, Yizoher Ma'al, Shelo Yachlit, Tekev, Esel Inyan, Bedaito, Le'inyan Ra. Number 1, you have to be careful not to make any definite conclusions when you present the advice. Rak yisponein heitev mitchila imhu be'etzem ra. You gotta decide whether this is something that is really bad, if it is bad, but not to draw any quick conclusions, not to decide with divinity. Number 2, and this is very relevant, shelo yagdil b'sipuro eso inyan lera yoser b'mashu. What does that mean? Don't exaggerate. Yes, you had a dispute over whether out of 700 orders that you filled, there were 2 or 3 orders that he said he did pay, and you're positive he didn't. That's not quite the same as somebody who just blew you off and never paid anything. Not to exaggerate if it's something that could be seen in 2 ways, to make that clear. Number 3, Sheikhavein Raplito Ellis, that the intention could only be for very specific, pragmatic purposes. Namely, that I had a bad experience with this potential partner a bunch of years ago. So nothing would make me happier than sticking it to him. I know right now he's down on his luck, he's looking for another partner. So finally I can get him back by ruining this new partnership, by ruining this new shidduch. So says the Chafetz Chaim, if that's your intention, even if you're not going to exaggerate, and even if you're not going to exactly decide, but if your intention is to get revenge, get the guy back, so then for sure you are not allowed to give that advice. Number 4, and this might be the most important of all of them. Im hu yachal l'savei v'satou eles hazou mibli sheyitztarech should be a chaf. There is a way of bringing about the same result without having to divulge the details, like the story of the Chazon Ish. If it was my brother, I wouldn't recommend it. If it was my family member, I wouldn't recommend it. Why not? I wouldn't. None of your business. So if that would stop the partnership, there's no obligation for me to go into all the gory details that the guy is dishonest and he's lazy and he's etc. There's no, if you could accomplish the same result by just saying that my own brother would not recommend getting into this business, so one has no right to divulge any more than that. Finally, number 5, Kol ze eino mutar, rak im la yisuvav ayidei sipur ra mamish lanidam. That's only a question of, by me going ahead and divulging details of what happened to me, when I dealt with this fellow in business. So what's going to happen? Not that something terrible is going to directly happen to him, but he's not going to be able to enter into a partnership that could potentially yield gain. So then it's okay. But if by me talking, something immediately and directly that is negative, not just preventing profit, but it's going to be a loss out of pocket, and it's going to be an immediate loss, so under those circumstances, I have no right, says the Chafetz Chaim, to open my mouth. It's bottom line, probably the most relevant is Dalit. That's, you know, we're not, that's to happen every time a child, every time one of these cases comes up. So if we habituate ourselves to minimize details, whatever is not relevant, if you're confident that it's such a bad idea, if to just say that if it was my own brothers, my own sister, I wouldn't do this, that should be enough. Now, mind you, you have to be, a lot of times sometimes that's not enough, because you have to be confident that you're properly assessing the situation. Sometimes you may not be confident you're assessing the situation properly, in which case you have to give the questioner enough information for he or she to make the decision on their own, and then you got to pay attention to these other klalim, not doing it for the sake of revenge, not exaggerating, etc. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's case by case. Case by case. Number five is to, if it's not to get involved in a case that is going to be, direct or actual or guaranteed loss out of pocket, as opposed to something that's just more indirect or a loss of revenue. What about, just to briefly touch upon in the remaining few minutes, what about an instance in which the concern is not the harm that I'm going to cause somebody else, the other shidduch, etc., but the harm is rather something, as was suggested, that's going to be brought upon myself, that by me getting involved in this case, so my clients are going to leave me, or I'm going to get fired from my job. That somebody asks me about my boss, and I have what to say about my boss, and I'm not going to exaggerate, it's all true. But if I give this advice, somehow the little bird is going to get back to my boss, and I'm going to lose my job. Is one obligated to give advice that would put himself at risk? Or in the case of Dayan Breish, where let's say the law would be as it is today, which is not his case, the law would be that for you to divulge would be a breach of doctor-patient confidentiality. Leaving aside the law, I'm willing to follow halacha against the law. Yeah, but I'm going to get caught and I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to get censured by the very. So am I obligated to put myself out to such an extent? So in this regard, it would seem that the famous Gemara in Bava Metzia is very, very pertinent, is very relevant. Number 12 on the sheets. Darash ben Petura, in a case which I think they cut off here in the beginning, the famous case, there we go, of Shnayim Shayu Mahalchim, two people walking in the desert, and there's only a single ketone mayim, there's only a single canteen of water, and it's been assessed, if you divide it in half, what's going to happen? They're both going to die. If I drink it and he doesn't, so I'm going to make it, and he won't. So Ben Petara would teach, Mutav Yishtu Shneim V'yamusu, better for the two to drink and to die, V'al Yira Echon Me'em B'misasal Shel Chaveiro, and not let each see the death of the other. Achebo Rabbi Akiva V'limein, until Rabbi Akiva came and taught, V'chayachicho Imrach, teaches you, Chayecha Kodmin L'chaye Chaveircha. Looking out for number one, that my life takes precedence over your life, that yes, there is a mitzvah of atzalas nefashos, There's a mitzvah to save a life. That's part of Hashavas Aveda. There is a prohibition of Lo Saman Adam Reyecha to not save a life. Nonetheless, the halacha is that your life takes precedence. Chayecha, Chayecha Kodmin. The only problem is, that's with respect to life. What about if it's just a question of Parnasa? That's Chayecha Kodmin doesn't automatically mean that whatever is good for me should take precedence of what's good for somebody else. Chayecha Kodmin means if I don't know how to swim, and I'm going to jump in to try to save somebody, I'm going to lose my life very likely. So there's an obligation to lose my life in order to save somebody else. But in the event where the only issue is loss of income, is loss of parnasa, loss of a job, loss of a friend, loss of a family relationship, so under those circumstances, Chayecha Kodmin does not automatically apply. The Poskim do address other things that may apply. Now, just as a frame of reference, if in question here was simply a positive commandment, namely the mitzvah to give good advice and to save somebody from a bad situation, if only in question was the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasadim, so it would be pretty straightforward that one's not obligated to do something that is going to absolutely ruin their lives. The Gemara has in Ksubas that the rabbis made a takana, Be'usha Hiskino, in this town of Usha, an enactment was made that Hamivazves al Yivazves Yasa Mechomesh, that one is not allowed to give more than 20% of their income towards the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Shulchan Aruch extends this not only to the mitzvah of tzedakah, but to all positive commandments. If you're not going to have a lulav and esrog without spending more than 20% of your assets, you're not obligated to do so. If wearing a yarmulke to work is going to cost you your job, so Moshe writes in the tshuva, you're not obligated to wear a yarmulke to work. That's the equivalent of more than 20% of your assets. However, the problem over here is that in question is not only a positive commandment, but a negative commandment of lo saman adam reyecha. Not standing idly on your brother's blood. And over here, when it comes to a lo saseh, we don't have these exceptions. If God forbid a person cannot keep Shabbos unless they're going to work, get a job unless they're going to work on Shabbos. So although chas v'shalom, certain people my age would never judge individuals who came to this country at the beginning of the last century and in the 20s and the 30s and did what they had to do, chas v'shalom. As people walking around with the daf yomi gemaras, they do the same thing if they had to. But at the same time, we do have the utmost admiration for the smaller percentage of those who remained Yireyim and Shleimim, of those who came every Erev Shabbos, they came home and they knew that come Monday they wouldn't have a job, because that's the din in the Shulchan Aruch, that if at stake is not your life, but only money, for a lo saseh, you have to lose every last cent. So that's a problem over here. What if we don't be dealing with a positive commandment, so we have the rule of not more than 20%, and not more than 20%, the Avnei Nezer, the Sakach of the Rebbe, and others extend to include, even if it's not money, but something that will ruin your life, you're not obligated to get involved in a positive commandment. But if in question is a negative commandment, namely, Lo Saman Al Dam Reyecha, so here it's a lot more complicated. Even if you're going to lose a lot of money, you don't have the right to violate a negative precept. That being said, there are a number of angles, a number of approaches suggested by the Poskim that would not require us to get involved in many situations that may prove personally harmful. So first of all, the most extreme cases where it's not a question of your money, but a question of a question of your health. A crazy, crazy shiloh that Baruch Hashem we don't deal with today anymore. The Radbaz, the Rav of Egypt and of Tzfat in the 15th through early 16th centuries, was asked a question regarding an issue in which a local governor, who was no great friend of the Jews, had decided the following, that Reuven owes a lot of money, and Reuven therefore is going to be killed. But if his friend Shimon allows me to cut off his hand, so then I'll spare Reuven. So essentially, here you have a situation to save another Jew at the expense of a limb. So what would you pass him? You're not giving up your life. It'll be done in a clean way. There won't be infection. Right? What's the halacha? So Rabbaz has a long tshuva. He concludes the Rachel, Darchei Noam, the ways of the Torah, the ways of peace. And there's no way the Torah could expect you to give up a limb even for the sake of another. If to such an extreme, there's no way the Torah would go. So that applies to those to a very extreme case. But what about just in the instance in a case of money? So it's tricky. A lot of times one has to assess whether I am absolutely confident of the advice I'm giving. That's, am I probably right or am I definitely right? Well, nobody is definitely right, only God. But am I close to definitely right? Or is it just a hunch that I have? If it's just a hunch, a case of a suffix, so it's not so clear that one should get involved in, certainly in a case where it's going to create great risk. That's another idea that is elaborated upon by Rav Moshe Hirschler, Zichrono Livracha, is the following notion, and with this we conclude. There is a commandment of Lo Samer Al Dam Reyecha. There is an obligation to not stand idly on the blood of another. And that includes, as we've mentioned, that includes not only actual life, but intervening with respect to preventing monetary loss, or preventing loss of a relationship, or any other very difficult situation. That being said, who is this commandment addressing? Since I have a certain amount of money in the bank that maybe I'll use for retirement, maybe I'll use for daughter's weddings, God willing, for tuitions, or maybe be lost any, as it won't matter. But this money, I've got X amount of money in the bank. I know for sure that if I would write a check to 5 different hospitals, there will be 5 people who will live for an extra 10 minutes because of my check. Do I have an obligation to do so? To take $10,000, take $50,000, that's all I have in the bank? But I have an income. I'll be able to live. I have food on the table. I got a house. But to take whatever extra money I have all the time and to give it away to save a life, why don't I have that obligation? Nobody does this, except for maybe big tzaddikim. But regular people don't do this. So that's a great question. The short answer is that the obligation is not a personal obligation, but is an obligation incumbent generally upon the Jewish community. Just as the Rama writes in the laws of Tzedaka, that I don't have an obligation to provide the ani, all of the needs of this particular ani. A fellow is $50,000 in debt. So once again, I could write a check for $50,000, but then I'm finished. Then I got no money for myself. But I'm okay. But I don't have an obligation to do so. My obligation is to share his plight with others. It's a communal obligation. It's not a personal obligation. So too, Rav Hirschler explains, based on a tshuva from the Mabit, the obligation of Lo Samer Al Dam Reyecha, of not standing idly on another's blood, is not a personal obligation, is an obligation incumbent upon the community as a whole, and therefore I'm obligated to do my part, but not necessarily something that is going to put me at greater risk than it would other people. This would not necessarily be my obligation. Rav Shlomo Kluger also makes reference to a din we find in the case of Hashabbos Aveda. That's returning a lost object very much relates to our discussion, inasmuch as we said, Lo Samer Al Dam Reyecha applies to money as well. Regarding Hashabbos Aveda, returning lost objects, the Gemara tells us that if your loss is going to be greater than what the object is worth, if shalom is merubim is gadol mechaveiro, if my time is worth more than this $2 item, there's no obligation for me to get involved in returning this object. So asks Rav Shlomo Kluger, wait a second, what about Lo Samer Al Dam Reyecha? That's according to the Rambam. To return a lost object is would also entail not standing idly on another's blood. So the answer is that the heter that is derived from Sukkim Misalamta, Pamim Shatam Misalim, Pam Shiatam Misalim, the heter of not having to return applies no samra dam reyachol also. So Sotil suggests from Shlomo Lekloger in other instances of la samra dam reyachol, where you're going to be hurt more than the other fellow is going to be helped, there is also an obligation for one to get involved. The Kapishtzer Rebbe was known as a giant of chesed. He was once approached in his apartment in the Lower East Side by an individual, a Rav, who was very, very down on his luck and very, very bitter. Rebbe, it's not fair. Look how poor I am. He points to his head. I don't even have holes in my hat. My clothing is threadbare. I can't. The Rebbe gets all excited. He sends his daughter upstairs, comes down with a box, and hands a beautiful new hat to this Rebbe. But Rebbe, that's your hat. I can't take your hat. So I respond to the Rebbe, no, no, no. This is only my Shabbos hat. When I give it to you, it becomes my Olam Haba hat. Because whatever we have, whatever we take for ourselves, stays after 120 years. Whatever we give to others, whether it's monetarily, or whether just as importantly, in terms of advice and other types of verbal chesed, that's ultimately what we take with us to Olam HaEmes.